Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino. With cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
This is Radio Cycling.
The World Tour's Big Four, Vingegaard, Pogacar, Evenepoel and Roglic are all on the road at last as the European season really gets going. Meanwhile though, further uncertainty surrounds the British bid to host the Tour de France, and in Pete's neck of the woods, the French stage race, the Route d'Occitanie, has been cancelled. My name's Jeremy Whittle, welcome to Radio Cycling. Here's the latest news. Britain's plans to host the Grand Départ paused as 2026 bid is abandoned.
Whilst we might have an aspiration to host in a certain year, we always have to remain flexible. What I would say is that our aspiration to host the Tour de France has not diminished in any way.
After his Strade stroll, can Tadej Pogacar rewrite the script for the Cipressa and Poggio to win in San Remo?
After last weekend's ride, I think there'll be a few more people paying attention on the Cipressa.
Let it snow. Will blizzards wreck Paris-Nice finale? So hello again everyone, I'm joined by Peter Cossens, live and direct from a garage somewhere in the French Pyrenees, who's currently repairing a punctured tyre. Pete, what's going on this morning?
Yeah, woke up, flat tyre, Jeremy, not good, couldn't get the kids to school, but it's lovely here actually today, so I'm going to send them out with a dog and I'm going to watch copious amounts of Tirreno Adriatico and Paris-Nice, as this is one of my favourite weeks of the season.
Excellent, excellent. Well, let's go to our first story, which revolves around the news that UK Sport have abandoned their pursuit of the 2026 Tour de France Grand Départ. Meeting with the media in London earlier this week, UK Sport Deputy CEO Simon Morton confirmed that efforts to stage the world's biggest bike race had been downgraded to merely an opportunity in 2027. "We are not actively pursuing hosting in 2026, Morton said of the Tour bid. But the news did not come as a surprise to those who've been following recent events closely, because there had been growing speculation that the bid to host the tour, announced by Rishi Sunak in his autumn budget in 2021, was already in trouble. The cost of living crisis facing local government, the difficult climate around government-funded sporting events in an election year, and the growing influence of Saudi Arabia in hosting major events all appear to have combined against the 2026 bid. But it's still a surprise to some, particularly after Stuart Andrew of the Department of Culture, Media and Sport and British Cycling CEO John Dutton stated very recently that feasibility studies were ongoing. According to UK Sport Chair Catherine Granger, the UK's future pipeline of mega events is tightening. So is there still a long-term appetite to host the tour? I caught up with UK Sport Deputy Morton in the posh seats at the London Stadium.
So 10 years ago, the Tour de France was in Yorkshire. Now it seems a long time ago, given today's news. Why has the 2026 bid not progressed further?
So for all of the sporting events that we're pursuing, we have to remain a little flexible on timing. The timing of events is not usually in our gift. international federations, international rights holders in this case, they have to think quite carefully about where all of those events are at. They need to think about rotation and fairness. And so whilst we might have an aspiration to host in a certain year, we always have to remain flexible. What I would say is that our aspiration to host the Tour de France has not diminished in any way.
Okay. I mean, as you mentioned earlier, the Tour ticks many boxes. There's less of a gender bias these days. It has significant social impact, and it's also free, so accessible to everyone. Do you see it as more, it's listed now as an opportunity for 2027? Is that a wish that you host it in 2027, or just that's kind of when the stack up of other events allows you to think about it?
We think 2027 makes a lot of sense for the UK. We do a lot of work to look at the spread of events we're hosting, trying to make sure that there isn't just a sort of a crunch in terms of the number of big sporting events, ensuring there's that regular drumbeat of big events. So 2027 is a really interesting year for us. It is an aspiration, but we do have some exciting proposals for the Tour de France in 2027. We're not in a position where we can talk about those more fully yet, but we are working towards a 2027.
Is that the men's race or the women's race or whichever you can get kind of thing?
So we've done some more advanced thinking about the men's race. The women's race is an equal aspiration, but I think we're flexible on that. Obviously, the staging of both races is logistically complex. But we're open-minded, and certainly as a host nation, we like to do things differently. We like to innovate. We like to do things for the first time.
And anyone who works in cycling knows that the costs that ASO put on the Tour de France are significant costs, and various figures are bandied around from time to time. Has it made it increasingly tough in a climate where, you know, local authorities are suffering, where government funding is a real premium? Has it increased the pressure on you to make every event really, really count in terms of value for money?
It really focuses our minds in terms of the wider economic landscape to make sure that the events that we are targeting are the right ones, that we're making smart choices for the country. The financial models behind a number of these events are very, very different in terms of how the revenues flow. So the events that we're going for are the ones where we think they generate value for money for the country.
And last thing, I know that Rishi Sunak in October 2021, he ring-fenced $30 million, I understand, for events, including a bid for the Gronzo part of the tour. I understand $11 million has already been allocated to rugby. Does that mean that there's £19 million on the table for the tour?
It means that the government has stated that it would like the country to bring the tour back. As you said earlier, some of the initial thinking was about 2026 Tour de France, so some of this is about fiscal cycles and when money can and can't be drawn down. So the government's aspiration to host the Tour de France remains. Our aspiration remains. We need to think a little bit more about the year in which it happens, but I think there is a genuine will to try and make this happen.
That's Simon Morton from UK Sport. Now, Pete, 10 years ago, you were immersed in the Grand Départ in Yorkshire in 2014, which I know as a proud Yorkshireman, that was a kind of a pivotal moment in your life and career as a journalist too. That felt like a genuinely euphoric moment in the history of British cycling. Does this latest news feel like the reverse of that?
I think it does, Jeremy, and we've been waiting for some good news. We've had a long string of setbacks in British cycling, obviously with races being, well, under threat, to say the least. I mean, not happening in terms of the women's tour last year, problems with the Tour of Britain. We've lost the Tour de Yorkshire, of course. That's gone, which looked like at one stage it was going to be a very long-standing event, and it didn't turn out to be that way. We're left with just Ride London now, and as a major event in Britain. And obviously, I mean, that's a great race, but compared to what we had a few years ago, and of course with the decimation of the domestic scene, it looks pretty bleak in Britain at the moment. And the fact that the tour was supposed to be coming here, I mean, that's always been the rumour, and a pretty firm rumour for the last few months, that it was supposed to be coming here in 2026. and now isn't, is a major blow to British cycling. Another major blow.
Yes, it feels like a bit of a shock, actually, given that only in Glasgow at the end of last summer, obviously, there was much feverish speculation that the tour was definitely going to be starting in Scotland in 2026. And I think for people also who've spoken to some of the key players who've talked about feasibility studies being ongoing, and that's including the Department for Culture, Media and Sport very recently stating that, it's actually a bit of a setback. Anyway, let's turn to the big racing story of the past week, which was, cue drumroll, Tadej Pogačar's eye-popping destruction of all of his rivals at Strade Bianche. Already a winner on the Tuscan White Roads in 2022, when he attacked from 49 kilometres out and went solo to the finish, the Slovenian used the extra 30 kilometres built into this year's Percorso to his advantage, making his winning move 81 kilometres from the line. Pete, it was a demonstration of confidence, bravado, endurance, arrogance, swagger. The adjectives go on, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, it was hugely impressive, Jeremy. I mean,
it was ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed watching it. And I mean, I just felt like it was a ride that we were going to remember for a long time, an historical ride compared with some of the great rides in classics history. I guess his domination was so extreme that many of those watching felt that it stripped the race of almost all the excitement and left it seem a little dull. But as I said, it was, as many pointed out, and certainly Lequipe pointed out this the next day, it was a performance right from the Eddie Merckx playbook, one that rewrote the script on how you race and how you win Strade Bianche. Now, Pogačar isn't racing Paris-Nice or Tirreno Adriatico this week. He's choosing instead to put his focus on Milan-San Remo, the first monument of the season, which takes place a week on Saturday. And looking ahead to that race, which of course follows a very well-established pattern, you've got a 300-kilometre race. Some describe it as the dullest race on the calendar. Like, it all gets decided in the last few kilometres when they reach the climbs of the Cipressa and the Poggio, 30 kilometres from home. And then particularly on the Poggio, we see a really gripping battle for victory. And you have to wonder, having seen the way that Pogačar won Strade Bianche, whether he could create a new template for winning that race. As I said, the winning moves have tended to go on the final climb of the Poggio. And when you look at it, you just want to wonder, what could Pogačar do differently? Now, I mentioned the Cipressa, an attack there with 30 kilometres to go is the most obvious place for him to go off script or create a new template for winning this race. It's almost 30 years since the race was last won with an attack there. That was when Gabriele Colombo went clear in a small group back in 1996. Prior to that, there are three capi, the headlands that are traditionally the waymarkers to San Remo's finale. They're steep in places, but probably too far out for a winning move. Anyway, well, let's get an expert's opinions. I spoke to Jaco Alula's Matt White, who's been at San Remo as a rider and a DS almost every year since Colombo's win. And I wanted to ask him where Pogačar might move. Did White think that the Slovenian could attempt another move as bold as his winning Strade Bianche attack? I started by asking him, surely it's impossible, isn't it?
It's a different race. It's a different race. You know, when you're out there on your own, on the dirt, you can really get into your own rhythm. And you know, at the start there, after the chase evolved, he had some good teammates getting in the way. And then he just got into his rhythm there and did his thing. Whereas, you know, the other guys were first surging into sections, then relaxing and attacking, then stopping. Whereas he just did an 80-kilometre time trial. Whereas San Remo is different. I think what it will do is put a lot more people on high alert for him to move on the Cipressa. Look, it's been a long time, I think, since Bettini won back in when I was racing, that any kind of move has been successful from the Cipressa. But cycling is changing, isn't it? So, you know, everyone knows there's going to be a move to go on the Poggio and that he'll be involved in. But the I think after the last weekend's ride, I think there'll be a few more people paying attention on the Chipressa as well.
So I wanted to ask Matt why a move on the Cappy wouldn't work. I mean, I guess it's obvious in a way, but he referred to the freaks in the peloton like Pogacar and how they might break the usual scenario.
What it is just too fast.
Yeah.
There's too many people still in. There's too many people from other teams that could easily that can shut him down on the flat in between those two in between the cappers. You know, no one can go away at 55, 60 k an hour when there's a bunch of 150 still there, because there's always people. The speed in San Remo is just too high up until the Chipressa, and then when the Chipressa happens, there's a natural selection. Then it stays very fast again until the Poggio. But you know, a key group that goes on the Chipressa is dangerous, for sure. And the likes of Vanderpool and Van Aert and our other little freaks of cycling will be watching his movements with a probably a little bit more intent than normal. But I think the main thing that'll change is just I think people will be a lot more attentive on the Chipressa, because everyone knows what's coming on the Poggio if you look at the last three or four editions. But I think everything up until the Chipressa, there's just too many teams have too many teammates, and the speed is just too intense for anything to go.
Ah, the woodwork squeaks and out come the freaks. That's Matt White. Pete, I think the interesting thing about Milan San Remo is everyone goes, oh, it's really boring. But it's actually one of those races that I really love the slow build, and I kind of, you know, try to make sure I'm there from at least kind of the bottom of the Turchino through to the coast and then along the Cappy, because I just love that ebb and flow and the kind of increasing anticipation, and you're just inching forward on the edge of your seat. So I know that it kind of always comes down to, you know, I think years ago when we used to work on pro cycling, we had a feature called X Marks the Spot, and it was a photograph of the Poggio with a big X on it, because we'd worked out how many attacks over the years had come at that particular spot on the Poggio, which is about a kilometre from the top, I think. Can that mould be broken? I mean, I don't really see that it can in modern cycling.
I mean, we've seen people attempting to do it in the last few years. I mean, kind of one that bizarrely springs into my mind is when Johan Alfredo attacked on the Chipressa with a group of riders a few years back, and they got quite a long way into the race. I mean, in the edition that was hit by bad weather, we saw I think Ian Stannard leading an attack that kind of went from quite a way out as well. I mean, it is possible to gain a gap on your rivals, but I mean, it's just maintaining it. I mean, talking to Matt White, I didn't play all of the clip there, but talking to him in a little bit more detail, he was saying that what Pogacar needs if he is going to attack on the Chipressa is a group of other riders going away, like Colombo had. I mean, Colombo had Max Chiandri and a couple of other guys with him when they attacked. I think there were four of them went away in 1996. And that's what Pogacar needs. He needs somebody like Van der Poel or Matej Mohoric or whoever it might be, guys that he knows are going to be strong in the finale, that have an interest in staying away from or preventing a bunch sprint from keeping away from the likes of Caleb Ewan or whoever else of the sprinters are in contention. That's what they need to do. If that's what they need to do, I think they can do it. But it's incredibly difficult because, I mean, as we see every year, the speed along the coastal road coming into San Remo is absolutely phenomenal. And I mean, you need to be a freak, as Matt described them, to hold off a bunch moving at that speed.
Well, let's see if the stars align in time for Tadej Pogacar in Milan San Remo. So it's the time of season when we start talking about snow. Yes, Paris-Nice heads deep into the Alpes Maritimes this weekend with the stage to Oron on Saturday, which finishes above 1,600 metres. Now, Oron in March is better known for skiing, really, not really cycling. Snow has been forecast in that part of France, but maybe the race organisation will get lucky. However, it would be a big shame to lose that showcase finish. But then it wouldn't be the first time that Paris-Nice has been beset by blizzards and extreme weather. In 1939, 67 riders abandoned the snowbound 233-kilometre stage from Nevers to Saint-Étienne through the Mont du Forez in what Roger Lapapie, who took refuge in a farmhouse, described as a white hell. And there have been many other stages subject to snow. When Frank Vandenbroek won at the summit finish to the Col de la République in March 1998, he did so covered in snow as a freezing blizzard settled on the finish line. Other stages have also been hit by snow, while the traditional consensus used to be that racing above 12 to 1500 metres in March was simply asking for trouble. That's why climbs like Montferrand and the Tanneron, much closer to the coast, used to be integral to the route.
Well, at least we have a new hot weather protocol, even if it doesn't look like we'll be needing it this weekend in Nice. Last December, the UCI announced the launch of a new hot weather protocol based on the wet bulb globe temperature. Of course, we all know what that means. Anyway, it's simply based on a sliding scale of measures according to the temperature in centigrade, that is, and a risk analysis. For example, between 18 and 22 degrees, ice vests and supplementary hydration are proposed. When the mercury climbs to 23 to 27.9 degrees, further measures are added until above 28 degrees centigrade, neutralisation and even cancellations are options.
Careful you don't drop the wet globe, Pete. Anyway, it's not something that will come to play until later in the season, really, because right now at Paris-Nice, it's more likely to be hot water bottles that are needed by the riders. But Pete, one final word, because the loss of the 2024 Route d'Occitanie, very much in your neck of the woods, is a worrying development, and it reveals too how precarious the existence is for some lesser races at the moment. What's the story here?
Yeah, it came as a bit of a surprise. I was just scrolling through Twitter, as I insist on calling it, whilst I was watching the Leeds-Stoke game last night, and probably says a lot about the quality of that game. And I saw this story. I knew that the organisers of the Route d'Occitanie, they were considering reducing it to a weekend race, a two-day race instead of a four-day race. Because, I mean, the main issue, and it's not this one race in France which is facing this problem, the main issue is security concerns related to the Olympics being held in Paris, obviously at the end of July and into August, and then the Paralympics as well that follows that from at the end of August into September. It does mean that almost all police leave has been cancelled, that police have been drafted in from all around the country to cover events. Not only in Paris, there are events happening in big cities all over France. Marseille's got sailing and football. Lille has got football as well. I mean, it's spread around quite a bit. There's none down in this part of the world. But it does mean that the gendarme and the police officers down here are being drafted into other parts of France. And that's basically meant that they haven't been able to provide or guarantee that they could provide security to the Route d'Occitanie. There's also some issues with finding sponsorship. And I guess that could well be Olympics related as well, as like there's so much focus on the Olympics in France at the moment. I mean, where I am, you kind of feel untouched by it, but obviously everybody's looking to this. I mean, it's the world's biggest show of sport, and it's happening in Paris. So everybody in France is looking towards that.
I mean, this is something that afflicted the Mont Ventoux race as well, isn't it? Because the one day race in June that goes over the Mont Ventoux and has two ascents of the mountain, and that's been cancelled for this year, because the Olympic Flame was also making a journey over the mountain at some point, I think, around the dates of the race. But, I mean, it's obviously it's not affecting the Tour de France and other big races, any ASO races. It's affecting the smaller race organisers, which makes you worry for their future.
Yeah, I mean, on the positive side, the organisers have said they are already planning for 2025. The race isn't finished by any means. It's just become an impossibility for them to run it this year in the way that they wanted to. So I'm pretty sure it will be back. But yeah, there are issues. And of course, there is always the sense that if a race does miss a year, that it won't come back. I mean, I'm not saying these races won't, but that's always a fear that...
Well, that's happened in the past, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has happened in the past. And I mean, I'm hopeful. I mean, for a start, because the Route d'Occitanie is the only pro race that we have down in the Pyrenees. I mean, there's nothing else unless you go over onto the Spanish side of the mountains. And it would be a massive loss for cycling in this part of the world where, I mean, it is a huge sport. We've got big French amateur teams down here. And I mean, the sport down here has just lost a lot of big pro races. And for this one to go would be a real disaster for the region.
Right. Well, I mean, it's also going to require a bit of rejigging maybe for some riders because it was one of the key prep races as well, wasn't it, for the Tour? But anyway, that's about it for this show. Thanks to Pete and our producers, The Wills, and of course to our guests, Simon Morton and Matt White. Thanks as ever for listening. We'll be back soon. See you next time.
Podcast Network.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business?
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.